Wet, cold and dishevelled, they were dragged unceremoniously into General China's bunker and paraded before his desk. One glance at his face and Sean recognised that the man was in a cold fury. For almost a full minute he stared at Sean without rising from his seat, and then he said,
"The woman is being moved to another camp, well away from here. You will have no further opportunity to see her until I order it."
Sean kept his expression neutral, but Claudia gave a little cry of protest and seized Sean's arm as though she could prevent the threatened separation. General China nodded with satisfaction at her distress and went on quietly.
"She no longer merits the special treatment which she has been given up until now, and I have ordered that she be placed in irons to prevent any further escapes. She will also be kept in solitary confinement."
The two female jailers were standing against the wall beside his desk, and he glanced at them and nodded. The taller of the two wore sergeant's stripes on her sleeve. She gave an order to the squat, toad-faced trooper beside her, and the woman came forward. The stainless steel manacles dangled from her hand. Claudia tightened her grip on Sean's arm and shrank away from her. The woman hesitated, and the tall sergeant gave another sharp command. The jailer grabbed Claudia's wrist and, without apparent effort, plucked her away from Sean's side. With the expertise of long practice, she spun Claudia around and thrust her face hard against the sandbagged wall of the bunker, snapping the manacles on one wrist as she did so, and then pulling both Claudia's arms behind her back and locking the second cuff on her other wrist. She stepped back, and the tall female sergeant stepped up and took Claudia's hands and lifted them high between her shoulder blades. Claudia gasped with pain as she was forced onto her toes. The sergeant inspected the manacles. They were closed snugly around Claudia's wrists, but she was not satisfied. Deliberately, the sergeant tightened them two more notches, and Claudia gasped again.
"That's too tight. They're cutting into me."
"Tell that bitch to loosen them," Sean snapped at General China. And he smiled for the first time that evening and leaned back in his chair. "Colonel Courtney, I have given orders that the woman is not to be allowed another chance to escape. Sergeant Kara is only doing her duty."
"She is cutting off the circulation. Miss Montero could lose her hands to gangrene."
"That would be unfortunate," General China agreed. "However, I will not interfere, unless..."
He paused.
"Unless?" Sean demanded savagely. "Unless I am assured of your complete cooperation, and unless I have your parole that you will not attempt another escape."
Sean looked down at Claudia's hands. Already they were beginning to swell and change colour, darkening to a leaden hue, the bright steel bands cutting into her wrists, the veins puffing up into dark blue cords below the manacles.
"Gangrene is a dangerous condition, and unfortunately our facilities for amputation of limbs are very primitive," General China remarked. "All right," Sean said heavily, "I give you my parole." "And your cooperation?" he prompted.
"And I promise cooperation," Sean agreed.
General China gave an order, and the sergeant used the key on the manacles, letting them out two notches each, and immediately the swelling of Claudia's hands dissipated, and her skin colouring began to return to its normal creamy tan as the blood drained away.
"Take her away," China ordered in English, and the sergeant nodded to her assistant jailer.
They each seized one of Claudia's arms and dragged her to the door.
"Wait!"
Sean shouted, but they ignored him, and when he tried to follow her, the big Shangani sergeant seized his arms from behind in a hammerlock.
"Sean!" Claudia's voice had a note of hysteria. "Don't let them take me!"
But they pushed her out of the bunker, and the canvas curtain fell between them.
"Sean!"
Her voice came back to him.
"I love you," he shouted after her, struggling against the sergeant's grip. "It'll be all right, darling. Just remember, I love you. I'll do what I have to do to get you out of here."
The promise rang hollowly in his own ears, and her voice was a despairing wail.
"Sean,
and then again, very faintly, "Sean!" Then silence beyond the curtain. Sean found he was panting with emotion, but he forced himself to cease struggling and stand quietly. The sergeant relaxed his grip, and Sean shrugged him away and turned to General China.
"You bastard," he said. "You rotten bastard."
"I see that you are in no mood for sensible discussion," China told him, and glanced at his wristwatch.
"And it's well after midnight. We'll let you cool off."
He looked at the sergeant and changed to Shangani.
"Take them," he indicated Sean and Job. "Feed them. Give them dry clothes and a blanket. Let them sleep, and bring them to me at dawn tomorrow."
The sergeant saluted and pushed them towards the door.
"I have work for them to do," China warned him. "Make sure they are in a condition to do it."
Sean and Job slept side by side on the floor of a dugout with a guard sitting over them. The floor was of a hard, packed, damp earth, and the blankets were verminous, but neither the discomfort nor the tickle of insects crawling over his skin, nor even thoughts of Claudia, could keep Sean awake. The sergeant woke him in the dark of pre-dawn from a profound and dreamless sleep by dumping an armful of clothing on his prostrate body.
"Get dressed," he ordered.
Sean sat up and scratched the bite of a bedbug.
"What's your name?"
It was a relief to be able to speak Shangani freely.
"Alfonso Enriquez Mabasa,"
the Shangani told him proudly, and Sean smiled at the unlikely combination. The name of a Portuguese emperor, and the Shangani name for one who strikes with a club.
"A war club on your enemies and a meat club on their wives?"
Sean asked, and Alfonso guffawed. Job sat up and grimaced at Sean's ribald sally.
"At 5 in the morning before breakfast," he protested, and shook his head sadly.
But Sean heard Alfonso delightedly repeating the joke to his men outside the dugout.
"With a Shangani, it doesn't take much to establish the reputation of being a wag," Job remarked in Sindabili, as they sorted through the bundle of clothing that Alfonso had brought them.
It was all second-hand, but reasonably clean. Sean found a military-style cloth cap and a suit of tiger-striped battle dress and discarded his bush jacket and shorts, which were by now in rags. He kept on his comfortable old felskoon. Breakfast was a stew of capenta, the fingerling dried fish he thought of as African whitebait, and a porridge of maize meal.
"What about tea?" Sean asked.
And Alfonso laughed.
"You think this is the Palana Hotel in Maputo?"
Dawn was just breaking when Alfonso escorted them down to the river bank, where they found General China and his staff inspecting the damage done by the Hind gunships.
"We lost 26 men killed and wounded yesterday," China greeted Sean, "and almost as many deserters during the night. Morale is sinking fast."
He spoke in English, and it was clear that none of his staff understood. Despite the circumstances, he looked dapper and competent in his beret and crisply ironed battle dress, medal ribbons across his chest, and general officer's stars on his epaulettes. The ivory-handled pistol hung on his webbing belt, and he wore aviator-style mirrored sunglasses with thin gold frames.
"Unless we can stop these gunships, it will be over in 3 months before the rains can save us."
The rains were the time of the guerrilla, when head-high grass, impassable roads and flooded rivers hamstringed the defender and afforded concealment and sanctuary to his tormentor.
"I watched those Huns in action yesterday," Sean told him cautiously. "Captain Job here borrowed one of your RPG-7 rocket launchers and scored a direct hit with an AP rocket."
China looked at Job with new interest.
"Good," he said. "None of my own men have been able to do that yet. What happened?"
"Nothing,"
Job answered simply.
"No damage," Sean confirmed.
"The entire machine is encased in titanium armor plate,"
China nodded, and looked up at the sky, a nervous gesture as though he were expecting one of the humpback monsters to appear miraculously.
"Our friends in the south have offered us one of their new DARTA missile systems. But there is the difficulty of bringing in the launch vehicles, heavy trucks over these roads and through Frelimo-controlled territory.
He shook his head.
We need an infantry weapon, one that can be carried and used by foot soldiers.
As far as I know, there's only one effective weapon of that kind. The Americans developed a technique in Afghanistan. They adapted the original Stinger missile, worked out a way of getting through the armor. I haven't any idea of the details, Sean added hastily. He knew it was unwise to set himself up as an expert, but the problem was intriguing, and he'd allowed himself to be carried away.
You are quite correct, Colonel. The modified Stinger is the only weapon that has proved effective against the Hind. That's your task. The price of your freedom. I want you to procure a shipment of Stingers for me.
Sean stopped dead on the riverbank and stared at him, and then he began to smile.
Certainly, he said. A piece of cake. Do you have a preference for colour and flavour? How about baboon ball blue and kiwi fruit?
For the first time that morning, China smiled back at him.
The Stingers are here already. It's simply a matter of picking them up.
Sean's grin faded.
I hope most fervently that this is a joke. I know that Savimbi has been given Stingers by the Yanks, but Angola is on the other side of the continent. Our Stingers are much closer than that, China assured him. Do you remember the old Rhodesian fire force based at Grand Reef?
I should, Sean nodded. The scouts operated out there for almost a year.
Of course, I remember.
Sean touched the lobe of his ear beneath the gaudy beret.
It was from there you launched the attack on my camp at Inhlozane.
His expression was suddenly bleak.
That was in another war, Sean reminded him.
China's expression relaxed.
As I was saying, the Stingers we want are at Grand Reef.
I don't understand, Sean shook his head. The Yanks would never give Stingers to Mugabe. He's a Marxist and there's no deep love between Zimbabwe and the US. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, yes it does, China assured him. In a roundabout African way makes good sense.
He glanced at his watch.
Tea time, he said.
I believe you were asking for a brew this morning. No matter what side we're on, the war made us all tea addicts.
China led them back to his command bunker, and an orderly brought in the smoke-blackened kettle immediately.
The Americans dislike Mugabe, but they dislike the South Africans more, China explained. Mugabe is harboring and assisting ANC guerrillas operating across his borders into South Africa.
Sean nodded grimly. He had seen photographs of the carnage created by a limpet mine, detonated in a South African supermarket. It had happened on the last Friday of the month, payday for monthly workers, when the store was crowded with housewives and their offspring, both black and white.
The South Africans have vowed to pursue the guerrillas wherever they run. They've already repeatedly made good that threat. Hot pursuit across the borders of all their neighbours. The ANC have announced their intention of stepping up their bombing of soft civilian targets. Mugabe knows what the consequences will be, so he wants a weapon to deal with the South African Puma gunships when they cross his border to cull the ANC.
I don't believe the Yanks would supply him with Stingers, Sean said flatly.
Not directly, China agreed. But the British are training Mugabe's army for him. They are the middlemen. They have got the Stingers from the Americans, and they are training Mugabe's crack 3rd Brigade to use them at Grand Reef.
How the hell do you know all this?
You must remember that I was once a minister, albeit a junior one, in Mugabe's cabinet. I still have good friends in high places.
Sean thought about it.
You're right, he nodded. It is all typically African.
So, the Stingers are at Grand Reef.
They were delivered by a Royal Air Force Hercules
14 days ago, and are scheduled to be deployed along the South African and Zimbabwe border by the beginning of next month. They will be aimed at your countrymen, Colonel Courtney.